Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hot Spurs podcast. It is Tuesday, the 26th of May, 2020. I am Steve, Leon C in Essex. And on today's My Spurs Journey, we have got Spurs superfan, Terry Hill. How are you doing, Terry?
Hi, Steve. I'm very well, thank you very much. Apart from the lockdown, everything's absolutely fine. Thank you, mate. And yourself?
Yeah, no problem at all. I was listening to another podcast where they said it was a guy in England talking to someone in Spain. And of course, I'd spoken to Crackers ages ago now, although it seems like only yesterday. And he's in Lanzarote, so the same rules. And I've got I've been sent through the new rules posted by Spain because my parents have got a house out there, so they get all this blah 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 blah. And what we worked out is that England, I mean, we all think we've been in lockdown, but compared to Spain and France and Italy and all those countries, it's someone described it as a lazy Sunday, really.
Because every day's a bank holiday.
Yeah, because really we've been going out. I mean, going down the shops whenever we want. Let's not get into it, but we've had it good, that's for sure. Compared to Spain, and just on that, the new rules have just come out for Spain. And you know, like when obviously last week it was, you know, what can we do, what can't we do, and for people like myself, Terry, and you, not a problem, you know, you use your common sense. Whether you rely on other people using their common sense, that's another thing. But in Spain, they've got like a list of 20 things. It's really specific about how many people can go into a shop and this, that and the other. And I just think, please, just do that, because it's so easy to follow. 30% of people are allowed in restaurants. You're not allowed up to the bar, but you can sit on a seat. And it's all sort of, it would basically mean that yesterday's debacle and the you know, I lean left, but I try and see the side, both sides, and I'm listening to let's get political, listening to Cummings, and I'm going, well, hang on a minute, why would you do that and this, that, the other? But, and I'm sure you thought the same. And at the end of the day, we just want to go, right, well, whatever, let's get this thing sorted and get football back. Am I right, Terry? Right.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, I don't actually miss football as much as I thought I would. I mean, it's been my religion for 50 plus years, and it feels like an age since I last saw a game. But, and it obviously is, but actually, with everything that's been going on, football isn't that important. And I do wonder whether, you know, they should just draw a line under it now, because playing in front of no crowd to me just doesn't seem like football.
No, that's what Rob White said yesterday, and he said he was umming and ahhing about watching it when it comes back. Of course he'll watch it, Rob.
Yeah, of course you'll watch it, Rob.
And of course, if we lose against Man United in that first game, we'll say how ridiculous it is and how unfair. And if we win, we'll go, well, you know what, that wasn't too bad, I suppose. On to the next game. Listen, Terry, I know of you. I've never met you, and we've had a bit of back and forth, not recently, because I don't really tweet too much these days.
No.
But certainly back in the day, where there was lots of interaction with discussions and everything, you always came across as somebody that, you know, a massive Spurs fan, not too controversial, sort of saw both sides. And you're just a name that always popped up whenever I tweeted anything. You went to a lot of Davy Elder's nights.
Yes.
And you've also, and again, through following you, whenever there is an evening, you always seem to be going to these things, which is brilliant. And just, it's always like this name, Terry Hill. And I hadn't realised that I had asked you on the pod a few years ago, because when I went back through the direct message on Twitter, I was like, oh, I've asked someone before, but you didn't want to do it. I don't know the reason. And Dan Jones, by the way, if you're listening, I want you on the pod. And if you're not going to do it, then your boys will do it, definitely. I want to do a couple more of these because I'm really enjoying them. But, Terry, you are a massive Spurs fan.
It's certainly been a religion in my family. I mean, my dad used to go in the late 40s, sort of the push and run side of the 50s, and then obviously waxed lyrical about the double side in the 60s. And obviously I came along and I got one of four boys, but really I was the football fan amongst the four boys. And yeah, he started taking me sort of late 60s, 68, 69, probably. I don't remember the first game, unfortunately, but I've been going ever since then. And then obviously I had two boys and they were both brought into the Spurs religion. And the oldest boy's got three daughters and obviously three granddaughters for me, and they're registered as Spurs junior members on the day they were born by me. So yeah, Spurs through and through. And I think hereditary-wise, it's a family thing that you always continue, and that's where most people started, from their dad or their mum or whoever that took them in the first time.
Brilliant. And what about your kids? Have they got any Spurs names?
The three girls, so no, but they loved it. They loved Dele Alli and they love Son, and they know all the chants, the polite versions of the chants, even though the one's a 4-year-old and one's a, well, a 2-year-old doesn't yet, but a 4-year-old knows them all, and the 7-year-old knows most of it as well. So now they've got posters on their walls and everything, just as you would expect. They've got all the kits, yeah, as you buy them for Christmas and birthday presents. So yeah, their first words they heard, as my boys were when they were even being born in the hospital, was Spurs, because the doctors were Spurs fans. We was talking about football as they popped out, or in my son's case, as he was talking to the doctor as well about Spurs at the same time. So I think no choice. You know, they're my children, have got to put support Spurs. No alternative.
There was a player, Danny Hill. Do you remember? He only played a few games.
Yes, I met him once.
I remember him, and he was touted at the time as being the new Glenn Hoddle. And I remember watching him. And the reason I remember him so vividly was because the guy called Dave Dennison was the managing director of Director, who used to remember sponsor all the games on the program. It was always this match is sponsored by Director, and he played golf with my dad several times and got friendly. And he's the one that said to me, and I was only young at the time, what, 15 or whatever, he said, "Watch this kid, Danny Hill. He's absolutely magnificent. The new Glenn Hoddle." He played a handful of games and he did look great. But he didn't play very much after that. I don't know if he got injured or whatever happened to Danny Hill. But there you go.
I met him doing some training of some youngsters. So maybe, whilst he didn't make it, as you say, himself to the level you hoped, hopefully he's passing on some of those skills and to young kids. In, I think it was around St Albans Way or something like that. I saw him, meant a good few years ago now.
All right, yeah. Brilliant. Right, well, let's get into it then. We've kind of covered who your favourite football team is, unless you want to say anybody else.
No doubt.
Okay. And what is your favourite country?
We love travelling, and I retired early last year so we could do more travelling. But, of course, this virus and pandemic has put a stop to that for the time being. But I love the UK. I don't think you can beat the UK for lots of reasons. But if I had to choose overseas countries where I'd be prepared to live if I was younger, maybe Sydney in Australia or Vancouver in Canada would be the choice.
Now, I've got a couple of mates in Sydney. I know all about that. Vancouver, beautiful, right?
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. And they speak our language, which obviously helps.
Yeah.
And the food and drink is lovely as well. So, we've been to both.
I always ask about the food and drink. So what's the food and drink like in Vancouver? Fish, isn't it? Would it be seafood?
Yeah, there's a lot of fish there. I'm not the biggest fish fan, but it was just nice. And as I got friends in both those places, which enabled us to meet up, have something to eat, and a few beers along the way as well, which helps.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Yes, that's the other thing about you. On Twitter, you're always posting, or you did for a little while, posting pictures of you going around everywhere. And there was even one, you must have got back recently, because there is even one with you with masks on. Was it in the Far East?
Yeah, we literally came back just before this lockdown started. So we went to Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos and Thailand, literally as a three and a half week holiday for this year. And I think we landed back on the 12th of March. So literally, and we were fine. There was no sign of it over there. I mean, everyone's aware of it. We came back and there were no toilet rolls and there was nothing you could do when you came back. So you did your first shop and you got about half of what you wanted. But yeah, then you got realised just how serious it was coming, and then obviously locked down and the rest of the
trip. Yeah, and you were over there, that part of the world. I mean, obviously it's a huge area,
yes.
So it was obviously China was the lockdown. But was there, and you had masks on, was that a direct?
I only wore masks once when we went to Ho Chi Minh to see the tomb of Ho Chi Minh, whoever it was, someone well known. But that was the only time we wore that for half an hour when we was in there. The rest of the time, no, didn't wear them at all. And yeah, there were locals wearing them, but they wear them every day of the week and under normal circumstances. There were no Chinese there because obviously they'd been locked down before us. So there was no queuing to anything we went to see. So all of the landmarks and the Great Wall and the the various cities and everything, the tombs, they were just empty. So it was great from a tourist perspective because you didn't have thousands of people in front of you pushing their way through to the front, so to speak.
And in Vietnam, there's a famous snake restaurant. Did you eat snake when you were there?
No, I saw a few dodgy bits of food and what have you, but no, for the sake of the tummy, I think I gave it that a very wide berth.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with that. I do know because that is my phobia, and I don't know. I was watching this program once about Vietnam, and there was this snake restaurant. They literally showed how they did it, literally they went into the kitchen, like if you imagine watching a Gordon Ramsay program, and they go in the kitchen and opened up all the cupboards. And the fridges, and they're all full of snakes. Literally thousands of snakes. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. anyway, let's get back to football. Which footballer do you dislike the most?
I gave this one some thought, and whilst there's an obvious answer that probably most people have given, the one I detest the most, I think, has got to be John Fashanu, what he did on Gary Mabbott all those years ago. Obviously Sol Campbell would be a choice, the obvious choice, but John Fashanu would be my choice. And even Vinnie Jones with Gary Stevens a bit after that, but certainly John Fashanu. And the fact that in the press afterwards he said he'd apologise and Mabs had said he forgave him. Well, Gary Mabbott's told us the truth many a time since that he never went to see him in hospital and he never forgave him and never will.
And even Gary Stevens, who was on the Cheese Room podcast, another good one that I listened to, very funny actually, and he was on that, and even he talked about it last week, and about the Vinnie Jones tackle, and he even said he's seen him a few times, and I think, I don't want to get this wrong, I think he sort of said the first couple of times he saw him there was no remorse. But then it was all right, and he's fine with him now. But I think that's more to do with Gary Stevens.
Yes, Gary Stevens is a forgiving and forgetting sort of individual, I think. And Mabbs as well, in fairness. But that was extreme, I think, with Fashanu. And it could have it did do serious damage to his face. And that's not football in any way, shape, or form.
No, absolutely not. And quirky characters, and Fashanu, obviously, with his background and everything, you want to. I don't know about you, but with his brother and his upbringing, I want to like him. I really do. But that viciousness.
Yes.
There's no excuse for that. And even with Vinnie Jones, I almost would have liked him to don the Spurs shirt for a season. Not for his football's talent, and not for his tackling, just to get in that dressing room and grab a few people around on the shirt collar and go, listen, kick, let's play some football here. Let's get stuck into them. Show a bit of passion.
We've not had many of those players in the years. We've had sort of Terry Yorra for a while and Edgar Davids for a while.
Yeah.
But you can count the number of hard players since the Dave McKay era, but obviously the more modern era, you can count them on one hand, if that.
Well, show a bit of passion, about Harry Kane going down at the half time at Ajax.
Yes,
just saying to the lads,
show your love and
come on. Anyway,
yes.
What about the team that you dislike the most?
There's a colour in this that will never appear on my body, and there's a colour that'll never appear in this house or any house I've lived in, and that's red. So I think the answer to that one is clearly that South London mob. Even from my first games that I sort of remember watching on telly, if it wasn't Spurs, it might have been that lot. And I've never liked them, never wanted them to win, never wanted them to win a corner, let alone a game or a point. Hate Chelsea with a passion. They're so arrogant since the Abramovich era, and when they were nothing beforehand and bought their success, and the players they bought, like the Drogbas and Ashley Coles and the John Terrys and Lampards on the pitch, were so arrogant and aggressive and winners, admittedly, but they were just a nasty lot. But they'll never surpass the hatred that we have for that other lot.
No, you're absolutely right. You can't even say it. I mean, I'm never read, absolutely. My boy never read as well.
No, I've got nothing red in my. Oh, I got wardrobe.
No,
Yeah.
absolutely not. Absolutely not. And a couple of years ago, my mum for Christmas bought me a right. So it's a beautiful textured cashmere, whatever it's called, really expensive scarf.
Oh.
Right, for Christmas. So
Mm.
I've opened it and I've gone, Mum, it's red. And she said, yes, but it's a really nice one. It's lovely. It's Christmassy. I said, it may be Christmassy, Mum,
It's red.
but what are you doing?
Even
So
Santa in our house wears a blue
I
hat.
didn't. And my dad's looking,
Yeah.
arms folded like that.
Yeah.
Honestly,
No
what are you
idea.
thinking?
She kept the
So.
receipt, hopefully.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of those. It was one of the times I said, "Take that back." Yeah, no, never read. Absolutely right. What about your favourite ever player?
I've been lucky enough to meet him. I didn't think I would, but Glenn Hoddle has got to be that. He's the player that I saw most of his home games when he played for Spurs. Can't remember a bad shot, bad pass, bad performance. I'm sure there were, but I can't remember any of them. And the legendary goals that you see even to these days surpass anything you see in current football. And he's such a nice bloke with it as well. He knows his stuff. He's passionate about Spurs. He's grew up as a kid and sort of started training with Spurs as a kid. And shame he never really made the managerial side at Spurs, but I think that's probably just the wrong time when there was no money at the club that he would happen to be manager. But as a player, absolutely the best by a mile.
Yeah, I think he was unlucky with the football. I mean, with the manager side of it, because if I do remember, there are certain period where I think we were doing great, and we were all saying we are the best footballing side, which we've always kind of been over the years.
Yes.
Football inside, but we were winning as well, and I think we'd won the first three games. I remember being in Spain and watching us beat Newcastle. Poyet scored a great goal, Poyet, and I think that we were for about 6 months we were terrific, and it was all going swimmingly. I think maybe there were a couple of injuries to key players, something went wrong. It wasn't quite right. But again, a couple of years ago, didn't he ask to come back? He sort of said to
Yeah,
leaving.
he said he would when we had problems or some managerial problems. Yeah,
Or
he certainly offered.
it was going to be. It was when AVB went, wasn't it? And he said,
Yes.
"Listen, if you want me," and Levy went for Tim Sherwood. I
Yeah.
mean,
Yeah.
of all the things that Levy's ever done wrong, my
Yeah.
goodness, get Hoddle back for the last 10 games at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think there were some classic things which did go wrong. Obviously, the 5-3 at United, where we were 3-0 up, but we were brilliant in that first half, and United were a classy side and showed in the second half. Probably the League Cup final where we had to travel away to Cardiff as well, and that was under Hoddle, I think, and we lost to Blackburn, and that was an horrible game. But no, as I say, can't fault him as a player in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And obviously, talking about the Knights, you go to loads of them, don't you?
Yeah, I try to. I've been since about 2008. I bought a book for my son's 21st birthday, and almost been my book since, in fairness, but it's his book. Trying to get the players' autograph, ex-players' autographs in there. And just before the lockdown, the day after I came back from Vietnam, I went to see Naeem, and he was the 200th person I've got to sign the book. So I'm pleased with 200. I'd like to see a lot more. There's loads more I haven't seen yet. But yeah, that was really what started it. And I thought those sort of events were the great opportunities to meet some of these players that you still idolise when they're on the pitch.
Did you go to the Hall of Fame?
Yes, the induction that night at Spurs. Yeah, I went to four or five of those over
Did you go to
the.
the Chris Waddle one with Paul
Don't.
Allen?
No, I went to a number. I don't remember the Chris Waddle being any of that. I met Chris, but not at that one. So no, I went to several, but I don't remember that one specifically.
What about the Mike England with
Yes, yes, yes. I think Mike. It was on Mike's birthday, actually. I think it was the UEFA 72 winning Hall of Fame induction or whatever it was. And there was Gil Zean, Pat Jennings,
That's it.
Mullery, Chivers, and
That's
that lot
it.
there as
Yeah.
well. So yeah, no, Mike. First time I'd met Mike. In fact, the only time I think I've met Mike. And again, a true gent as always.
Yeah.
I know you know him well and what have you, but great bloke.
Well, my dad does. I always say I do, but my dad does, and he's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, great night. And a little secret that Paul Coity told me is that he had, so he'd never met Mike before, and didn't really know the lots of insights. So he listened to my podcast. He said, I listened to your podcast, and he talked about Pelé and the fact that he played with Pelé several times.
Yes.
And so we had to ask him that question.
Yeah,
so,
brilliant.
If ever the question comes up about our greatest ever centre-back, well, I don't think you can argue with Pelé the fact that he thought that it was Mike England. So.
No, I agree. I think we've had some great ones, but basically some dodgy ones. But yeah, Mike will always be up there. Probably with Jan and Toby, admittedly, and Roberts and Miller, maybe as well.
Yeah.
And Phil Beale, of course, who was obviously alongside Mike England, who I think often didn't get the credit that he deserved, but Mike certainly did deserve it.
Yeah, no, wonderful. Have you got to a point, because you go to a lot of these things and it's lovely, and just, you know, this is Terry, me and you chatting like on a phone call or anything, so I just ask questions that come to mind. Did any of the players know you now? Do they sort of go, all right, Terry, or?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Mickey Hazard is the obvious one. He seems to know everyone and he knows them by name. So you can, you know, I popped round his house once as well and so, ages ago. But yeah, he'll know me by name. I think Graham Roberts will knows me. And yeah, a number of them do.
And Terry, isn't that brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's brilliant. And, it's it'd be the heroes, but they know you by name, and I just think, wow, you know, I've made it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And they don't know me; they just always say, "Oh, hello, how's your dad?" That's what they say to me. What about your favourite ever manager?
Oh dear. I know there is one. He's probably the obvious choice. As much as I loved that Potch, Redknapp, Martin Yeo and even Venables before that and Berkshire with the trophies, but I think the one that's got to stand out for me was the manager I met when I was only 14 years old when I won the first competition and was fortunate enough to go to the Spurs ground and meet him and get presented with an autographed football by him in the underground training courts at Spurs, and then obviously the great and legendary Bill Nicholson. So that's what really, I guess, started off this whole autograph thing that I've done for the last umpteen years.
Well, put a little bit of meat on those bones, because that was a great little story. What happened? You won a competition?
Yeah, there was a competition every year, I think it was, but I won it 2 years running, ironically. It was in the Weekly Herald, Tottenham Herald, which is a local paper covering the Tottenham area, and Harry Harris, I think, was the sports editor. And you had to submit a few paragraphs on your favourite player. Now, we'd just won the League Cup against Norwich, and I'd been lucky enough to get to the Wembley to see the 1-0 Ralph Coates goal. But the player that got injured that Ralph Coates came on for was John Pratt, and I'd seen lots of John Pratt games and, you know, always valued his effort and energy, and he wasn't necessarily the most skillful players, but he was there and always a bit of an unsung and underrated player, in my opinion, and a number of appearances suggest the manager agreed up as well. And so John Pratt was the article I wrote. Article, it's probably about three paragraphs, but it was enough to win the competition. And they invited me to the newspaper studios to meet Harry Harris and have a quick tour of that. And then he took me to the ground, went underground then, or a little bit below the surface where there was the hard courts. And Bill Nicholson was there and introduced me to John Pratt and told Keith Osgood to go and get a football for me that had been signed by older players. And I had a photograph taken with John one side, Bill the other, and me in the middle. And I've got it here to this day, as a proud item to remember that day.
Wow, fantastic. Heart pounding. How old were you?
14. Yeah. So probably too young to really appreciate it even then. A bit naive 14 perhaps at that stage, because, yeah, if only I could have that time again, you'd ask so much more. But you felt in awe of the chap, so you didn't ask a great deal, but, you know, just sort of mouth wide open and couldn't believe it, where I was and who
full
I was.
Full head of hair,
long mop of hair, yeah, absolutely. I'd die for that now, or par for that now, to be honest with you.
Who is your legendary player?
If it's not a Spurs player, it has to be Messi, I think, Lionel Messi. I mean, I've seen him play, well, in Barcelona twice and at Wembley and as well. Twice at Wembley, once in the friendly and once in the Champions League the other year. I think it's that Champions League game at Wembley.
My dad and my friends all did when we talked about that game the next day. Did you do this? Did you go, wow?
Yeah, I mean, I did it all the way out. You know, the fact we lost was irrelevant because I never want to see Spurs lose, obviously, and never happy when they lose. But actually, yeah, seeing Messi, and it was his passing through the defence, yeah, as well as his shots at the post, and he could hear the ball at the post at the time, and you saw the goals that he stroked into the corner, and it was just a lesson on how to play football. And, you know, to be honest with you, I remember more about him at that game than any other player that's played against us in the history. I mean, he was just awesome.
You're right. The threading needle pass.
Yes, absolutely.
And he did it all through the game. He was absolutely magnificent.
Yes.
And
yes,
you came away from the game going,
wow.
I've seen something to tell my grandkids.
Yes, absolutely. I've seen Cruyff and Madonna playing the Spurs, for Spurs or against Spurs, and they were brilliant and legendary, obviously. Obviously on George Best as well, probably, but I don't remember a great deal. But yeah, the rest of it on telly. But that one was, Messi is undoubtedly the best player I've ever seen live against Spurs.
What about your favourite ever goalkeeper?
Big Pat. Pat. I don't know where he's at. He lives now, but where he used to live is literally about 100 yards from where I live now. Much bigger house, of course, not where I live. But I've seen him on the train station. I've seen him at the petrol station recently. Travelled up to Liverpool Street from Broxbourne, where he lives recently, regularly. Crossed over the railway line just to see him once, just to have a chat before he got on the train. He's always, and we sat next to him at the one of those Hall of Fame inductions. He sat one side of me, and my dad sat on the other side of Pat, and that was that legend's night I mentioned. And he's such a smashing chap, a deep Irish accent, but absolutely, you know, modest, shy almost, and not loud at all, but just a perfect gent, and you know, a true best keeper in the world, I think, and best keeper ever in my biased opinion, but my humble opinion.
No, it's not a biased opinion. It's the opinion of everybody. I mean, he is the greatest. Wonderful to have him associated with our club. What about the defender that is your favourite?
I'd like to say Stevie P. Because, I mean, you know, number of appearances he's made. But he did obviously play midfield as well as centre-back and right-back. But I'd say Stevie P. But I could argue the case for Ledley as well, because Ledley has always been awesome and you know, a fantastic defender and loyal to the club throughout, as we all know. So both those two guys, both for their loyalty and ability, I would say ranked at equal top in terms of defenders.
And your favourite midfielder?
How long have you got? I suppose it's got to be Hoddle, because he's my best ever player. So why would I not choose Hoddle?
We've done him. What about you? What about another one?
I mean, I like Gareth Bale. I mean, Gareth Bale. You know, when he stood up from fullback to more attacking. Just won us this game after game after game. Gazza was obviously the character. Ozzy was an artist. Ginler was a wizard. Yeah, I mean, there's so many of them you go through. Yeah. I'd stick with Hoddle, but I'd go with Gareth Bale purely because I think for such a long time when he was on his game, you know, he made the difference between us not winning and winning. You know, it's so many times and classically as well.
Yeah. People forget, of course, we were doing great. You know, Bale was wonderful. I can't remember the season, but it would have been a while ago now because, as I said on a previous show, I think Bale's coming up to his seventh year or eighth year at Real Madrid. He hasn't been with us for a while. But it was one of the, you know, one of the seasons, obviously, towards the end. But it wasn't his last season, but maybe it had been the season before. And what happened was we were going great. We were fourth or third or whatever. And Charlie Adam, not for the first time, went in on him and injured him.
Yes.
And I don't think we had him for the last maybe 6, 7, 8 games. We slipped down. And again, it's one of those things that nobody remembers.
We
like to moan as Spurs fans, but I think we moan more about the chairman. We moan about, you know, the players that replace the players that are injured, whereas other teams seem to go, listen, we've got major injury there.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons. Certainly on that occasion it was, and again, it's something that people don't remember. We have been hard done by on many times. And I listened to a podcast. It might have been the Spurs show, and they were talking about the worst events of Spurs history. And somebody said about, you know, Lasagna Gate or something like that, but there were many layers. And there are, if you remember, some of these seasons. So it's not just the fact that the team got food poisoning. It's also the fact that on that day that Fulop was playing for West Brom, they were 2-1 up, and he let one, I can't remember the goal, but he let one go through his legs, or he made a major hash of it.
Yeah.
Or that might have been the Chelsea when they the 1-0, you know. But even that Chelsea game, there was layers to that because Robin missed a penalty in real time. Chelsea had already missed two penalties, I think, in the penalty shootout before the Germans decided to miss three penalties. So there are layers to these things. Pedro Mendes' goal. If that would have stood, that would have meant that we would have qualified above Arsenal. So
I just wonder if every club's probably got these, but we just remember because of the passion. But I've certainly seen that we've had more than our fair share.
See, Terry, I don't necessarily agree. I think that other teams have got incidences, but not as many layers.
No, true.
If you were to say to, I don't know, an Arsenal fan even, Pedro Mendes' goal. What's your equivalent? I don't think they have. And certainly the European Cup thing. Yeah. I don't think there's been another team that has qualified for the European Cup finishing fourth, only to be then taken out of it because another team wins it. I don't think that's ever happened to another team.
No, you're right. You're so right.
So, hard done by Spurs. There you go. What about your favourite ever striker?
I saw Greavesy right at the very end of his career, and I must admit that my last memory of him probably in a kit was probably in a Barnet kit when he played at Chesant, a local side to where I live. And at the end of the game, he was sitting in the changing room having a cigarette, and you walked past the dressing room to get out through the turnstile at the end of the game. And there he was, puffing away in his golden black shirt at the edge of the changing room. And you think, you know, there was a legend, or, you know, obviously at the end of his career. Playing at local club side Chesant in probably a pre-season, post-season friendly, nothing's at stake, but he was there, and I remember literally within feet of him puffing away watching it, you know, just watching him just sitting there in the dressing room recovering from a game. And he was obviously, I remember bits of him on the pitch, but realistically, you know, a lot of it is memory from the television, I guess, these days. So I'll pass on Greavesy, and I'll pass on Harry Kane, because obviously he is a lot of people's favourite in the current era. I don't know. It's Klinsmann, is it? Is it? No, I'm going to go for Robbie Keane. Robbie Keane.
Okay.
I like Robbie Keane. I think you just got to admire the partnership he had with Bourbon, the partnership he had with Defoe, the goals he scored, the celebrations he did, the respect he had for other teams when he did score against, not to celebrate. Well, that's right or wrong. Go for whatever it is. But I think Keane, and even in the Legends going to open the new stadium against Inter Milan Legends, he's got a cracking goal then. I just think Keno is, for me, epitomises everything. He's played with a smile on his face. He had the talent and the cheekiness, you know, come out from behind the goalkeeper when the goalkeeper was running it out, rolling it out from a goalkeeper from his area and scoring. I think there's so many goals from Keno that you see and remember. And that, for me, he would be my striker that I would say was my number one.
Yeah. And I think that, and I've said it before, that obviously he's, I think he's assistant manager with Woodgate up at Middlesbrough.
Yes, yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see certainly Robbie Keane back at the club at some point. And if Woodgate, obviously, it does well as a manager. But I would certainly see Robbie Keane as the manager. Or assistant in the near future, because passion, again, we're talking about passion, intelligent, wants to stay in the game without a doubt. And what a wonderful, wonderful player to watch. The chant was, all we need is a team of Robbie Keane's.
Yes. Yeah.
My, not just because he was good, but because the rest of the team were crap at the time. okay. What about a game that's made you cry?
I heard this on a previous one. I struggle because I'm probably am not a sort of crying person from a football perspective. I think happy tears, certainly you'd say the Ajax and Man City games last year in the second legs, but obviously. I think the unhappy tears as such would probably be after the finale game at White Lane.
Yeah.
You know, the game itself was great. We'd had a whole season without getting beaten. The crowd invasion, pitch invasion, the legends coming on, the rainbow, and all the bits and bobs added to the whole story of the day. I think, but when it was all over and literally everyone was piling out and some people ripping things off the stands and ripping seats up and what have you, and you just stood and reflected as you
what
walked through that.
Did you rip off, Terry?
No. People sat next to me had their screwdrivers and were unscrewing seats and what have you. I just thought, no, I wouldn't go to a match with a screwdriver in case I was searched anyway. But
did you ask if they listened to the Fighting Cock? They probably do.
I think the reflection that it was never ever going to see a game there again after such a brilliant finale game and season, I think that was probably the worst moment if I'm thinking about sort of a match where a cry would be justified. In my opinion,
I didn't feel that way because I was so looking forward to the new stadium and I was thinking that this is the end of one chapter, and then the next chapter is going to be so much more fantastic. And it hasn't quite panned out that way so far. But
no, it's early days.
So early days.
Yeah,
I mean, my goodness.
Early.
We got to get. And I always said we got to get used to probably two or three seasons. Maybe four or five. I mean, but hopefully we'll get there in the end. I'm not comparing us to Arsenal in the fact that we're, what's happened with their stadium and everything. Why would you? We need to move. You know, in hindsight, if we'd have stayed at the stadium for all these years.
I think it's just the financial side, isn't it, that justifies why you have to do it and have to move with the times.
Fans moan, Terry, about not getting season tickets, not getting tickets.
Yes.
And then we get a bigger stadium and they all go, well, we should have stayed at the old stadium.
You can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both ways.
I didn't enjoy the Wembley time. I must admit, the Wembley year and a half, I didn't enjoy that. I mean, the journey was longer, but that, you know, not as long as a lot of people have, but it was long enough. I didn't enjoy the atmosphere.
I enjoyed it, Terry, because the team was still winning.
Yes.
Weren't we? We did all right there.
Very good. I think after the first two games, we did well.
You know, if I was going with a group of lads, maybe I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. But we went at TGI Fridays. We had a lovely time going to Wembley, and it's dead easy, two trains and straight there. But you know, people have different ways of getting to grounds and how they look at it, and different things. I spoke to Rob about going to Madrid, and I had a great time in Madrid. He had an awful time.
I was on the same plane as him. I was stuck at Stansted for 7 hours with him, 8 hours, whatever it was. It was an awful, and I must admit I did vote for that as being the worst game. It wasn't the worst game, clearly, but it was the worst experience because we took sort of 28 hours to see one game and never saw the country apart from being rushed from the pillar to post and missing the first 10 minutes. It was an awful experience, and it will scar me for life. It should have been our best experience of our lives, and
Terry,
of course it was dreadful
for you because absolutely, if I'd have been sitting on that plane and just gone to the game, the game was gone and dead and gone. Because Liverpool, their team, their game was score the goal and just
and sharp shop,
sharp shop, and they did it brilliantly. And fair play to them. But for us guys, I mean, we tried to get chants going. It wasn't happening. Everyone was swearing their heads off. Everyone was angry. People had either been on the booze all day, or had been like you guys, stuck on planes all day, spent a fortune. I mean, our tickets were extortionate. We weren't on the halfway line. We were behind the goal.
Likewise.
And, you know, and no prawn sandwiches to throw at anybody. No. I was devastated. But one of the highlights for me was we walked into this restaurant at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. A friend of my dad's had reserved a table and everything, and they sort of said, oh no, we haven't got it, the reservation and blah blah blah, but slip him €20 and sort this out. And anyway, the table next to us was, and I don't want to, sorry Terry, I'm telling this story for everybody else, ignore this because I know you were sitting on a plane, but we sat at this table and it was really, they were really hoity-toity, like very 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 posh. But obviously English and everything. And we was like, well, you got to be Spurs fans. So yeah, Spurs fans. Got chat. They were lovely. They were so funny. They had us in stitches. But the boy I sat next to said, "Oh, my name's Tottenham." And I said, "Sorry." And he showed me his passport, and his name was something like Reginald Tottenham Fitzgerald Smythe or something like that. And then his dad told the story about how he called his son Tottenham when and the wife didn't know.
Oh,
it was brilliant!
Wow.
So I was like, how you can, like, you know, look at a group of people and go, oh, I don't really want to speak to you. You know, 2 minutes later you're having a right laugh, and then one of them turns around and goes, "Hey, by the way, my name is Tottenham." And I was like, brilliant. So yeah, we had a right laugh, and then we watched a terrible game of football. But there we go. What's the next question? What's the first match you ever remember watching?
I tried to get to see the 66 World Cup final. It was on holiday, family holiday in a caravan park in this country at the time. And unfortunately, whilst my dad tried to get me into the lounge where the bar was, where the television was, it was only adults, invariably men only, and the women were left outside looking after kids whilst the men watched the football. So my biggest regret, that wasn't my first game that I remember seeing, either on telly or obviously it wasn't live, it was telly. I went 68, 69, but I don't remember the games that I went to. The first game I saw live on telly that I remember was the League Cup final in 69, where I guess already 10 years old, I was still, it was Swindon Arsenal, and Swindon smashed Arsenal, so that was great. Muddy pitch at Wembley in probably March, February, March time. And I remember that game vividly to this day, even though, you know. And then obviously the FA Cup final the year after was Chelsea Leeds, which was a famous one. But I guess the Spurs League Cup finals of 71 and 73 were my first memorable games because they were Wembley and they were finals that I remember. I struggle to remember my first league game. Was probably, I remember the Leeds United 4-2, where, you know, the Alfie Kong game where he stood on the ball, where we beat them 4-2. I remember that one, and that's probably the earliest league match live memory that I have, although I'm sure if I thought harder there must have been something the 5 years previous, but I don't remember the early games.
Yeah. What was your first World Cup, Terry?
I guess it was the 1970 and 66 I sat in, but the 70 definitely. And that was a magical, that was a Brazil-Italy game. And that's the one I remember.
Games on telly?
Oh, I would say yes. I don't know all of them, but certainly a large number of them would have been, I think. I don't know for certain. I just remember that final because of its, well, the quality of the football that was played throughout, and the final itself was one of those finals. I think finals tend to be a climax because teams tend to be more scared of losing than keen to win. But that game was just pure football, in my opinion. Yeah. And brilliant.
Wonderful. In about 100 degrees heat as well.
Yeah, exactly. Mexico, isn't it? Yeah.
What about a funny moment? Something's made you laugh watching football, or maybe the whole match, or a point where you've just burst out laughing?
I struggle to think of laughing ones other than when someone like Chelsea or certain other teams have lost. And they're always still funny. But
have you noticed, always funny. Listeners, that Terry still can't say the word Arsenal? He just says the other team. It's wonderful. Keep going. It's
very
brilliant.
Hard. Very hard. But then, I guess the match I remember most fondly where I did barely laugh was the Ledley King testimonial of a few years ago. That was a fantastic match, first and foremost. But I don't know if you were there, but there was a couple of instances, really. A fan became the linesman for a few minutes, and he was given the flag to run the line, and he got a couple of decisions right, which were really good. But then there was the Lewis Holtby tackle on Howard Webb, the referee at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were there. It was just brilliant, because Howard Webb, whether you like him or loathe him, and most refs you loathe, actually entered into the spirit big time in that game and throughout that game and played a good part in it. And Lewis Holtby just, you know, took him out and carded him, I think, as well. So I think it was just one of those last-minute games, because it was Spurs against Spurs. So, you know, you didn't care less who won. Ledley scored a goal from a penalty, and I think it was 6-3 in the end. So goals galore. And it was just a fun time to be. And we had great seats sort of low on the West End to watch the game. And yeah, I just remember the Lewis Holtby thing. I think it's probably the funniest bit I've seen on a Spurs game.
Yeah, no, wonderful. Unfortunately, I didn't go because we played actually the last game of the season the day before, and I couldn't justify going up to Spurs twice. I watched it recently, one of the games that I've been watching on YouTube. And yeah, it seems like a wonderful time. And I thought Holtby went in quite hard on Howard.
Yes, he did. He didn't hurt him, really.
Yeah, I think so. But I hope he just said that was for the Gomez tackle.
Yeah.
Which would tune it up at Man United.
Oh, no.
The worst decision ever.
Ever.
Or was it Mendes not giving the goal? See, there's another one. There's another one. The Mendes.
Yes. The Gomez kicked the ball out.
The other one that did that was Paul Robinson. We were away at Seville, was it? And I think we were doing all right. Paul Robinson came out and did exactly the same thing. The player was clean through. Paul Robinson, two hands on the ball, but the player went over. So it looked like a foul if you watch the player.
Yeah.
But if you watch the ball, he saved the ball. Goalkeeper gave it. And then, of course, another one where we're hard done by. What about the worst football match you've ever seen?
Oh, God. I remember this one because I was on a work training course in Wimbledon, of all places, for like a 1 week, 2 week course. And you stayed out, lived in either a hotel for the week or in the stranger's house, which you would never do these days. But you were put up in a house in a spare bedroom in someone, complete strange family's house for the week. And you know, the course was in Wimbledon, as I say, and Spurs had the League Cup quarterfinal match at home. 1983, I think it was, against Burnley.
Yeah.
And I was boasting. We won the Cup, the FA Cup, the two previous years, so we had a great side, and that side was still together with Archibald and Crooks and Hoddle and Mabbott and Perriman and Houghton and Clements and all the players you would name and just reel off. And it's Burnley at home, and I don't think Burnley were in great shakes at that stage. No disrespect, them, they'd obviously got to the quarterfinals, so it couldn't have been too bad. And I took a few mates from the course who weren't big Spurs fans, but they were football fans, and probably their first time to White Hart Lane and only time potentially. And I was sort of singing the praises throughout the day and the days leading up to it. And we got there and we got walloped 4-1 at home, and it was a shocking performance from the first to the last minute. And I think I got the mickey taken out of me the whole way back to Wimbledon and the rest of that week for the courses. And it was just a shocking game, and we just didn't turn up. Yeah, it's just one of those things that it was just awful, awful, awful.
I mean, you say that. I have no recollection of the game at all. I would have been only 6 or 7. I wouldn't have really. I didn't really follow football until I was about 9 or 10. Anyway, that game. I think what I'm going to take out of that, Terry, is when you look at certain periods of time, and people say, "Oh, that was brilliant. That was the time. That was when it was brilliant. This guy didn't put a foot wrong. This guy did." But you're talking about quarterfinal of the FA Cup. Yeah,
League Cup.
All the guys, they all played, presumably.
Yeah. I think it was a full 11. There was no obvious injuries at that stage.
At home, we just won the FA Cup 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
We're on the up. We're brilliant. Yeah. We win the UEFA Cup the year later.
Yeah.
No, there's no reason for it apart from the fact that they, you know, and you think, you know, think about modern day. Teams like Man City doing that. I mean, would they do that? They haven't, have they? They've won three League Cups in a row, two FA Cups in a row. The last seven of the last eight domestic trophies Man City have won. Going back, Liverpool used to win everything all the time. Man United, obviously, for about 20 years, won everything. Arsenal even would win. Chelsea would win. Why do Spurs just do this when we get a decent run together? And I'm thinking of the Portsmouth game. Even last season, why did we lose to Crystal Palace? There was no reason. You can lose on penalties to Chelsea. That's fine. You can lose to Liverpool in the European Cup final. But why are we losing to Crystal Palace? Why is Trippier missing that penalty? Is that just because we're Spurs? I mean, it's crazy.
I think it's a mental thing because it's not, you can say on the pitch they're better players individually and collectively, but I don't know where they're hungry enough. Spurs have always seemed to have that, you get that game where you need to win it to get in that top four. You need to go top, even if it's only going to be for a few weeks. But we always seem to just let the fans down when that big match comes and you have to win it, so to speak, a six-pointer type thing. We never seem to be able to turn those sides over or play to the level that we're capable of playing when we need to. It's a Spurs thing, but again, we would say that, wouldn't we? But it certainly seems to have had more than our fair share of those sort of games.
Yeah. Our time will come, Terry, though, won't it?
Yeah, well, if I could live for long enough. I always hoped I'd win something, see something. I mean, I've seen the FA Cup wins and some League Cup wins, and my boy who goes with me now and has been going as a season ticket holder the last 20 years with me, he saw a League Cup win in 2008, and that's his highlight of his life in terms of football. And that's a League Cup win against Chelsea, a brilliant game. But, we travelled to Cardiff, we saw us lose, he's seen us lose in other finals, but he's never seen us in an FA Cup final, and yet he's in his early 30s. It's just scary, isn't it?
Yeah, and let's be clear, that is the greatest, it was the greatest feeling, it was wonderful, walking out of that stadium when Woodgate scored.
Hi-ho, silver lining singing at the end of the game, and all that
without
stuff.
A doubt, it would be, it's the greatest moment in the last, 15 years.
Yeah.
Winning trophies is what it's all about, of course it is, but at the same time, let's as football fans, as Spurs fans, not just dismiss everything because we haven't won trophies. I mean, the number of times you read about we didn't win this trophy or that trophy, and I always say, Terry, that it's blimmin' hard. City are winning seven of the last eight. Someone brought up, Wigan won one trophy in the last 10 years. Swansea won a trophy in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, Swansea played Bradford in the final. Why can't we play Bradford in the final?
Yeah, we never get an easy finalist, do we? It's always Man United or Chelsea, or seems to have been in Liverpool, obviously, in the last few years. We've never had a Wigan or a Hull or an Oxford or Portsmouth or whatever. It's always, the top sides about. true.
Yeah. All right, have you ever been scared at a football match?
I heard the Rob White's chat last night before I went to bed, and it was not the same game, same era, same part of the ground. I used to always go with my dad when I was young. He had a box, I think I stood on, or I stood in front of the barriers or behind the barriers, and it was always in that top corner of the shelf next to the Park Lane where the away fans were, and it was Birmingham City. I always remember this, and I don't remember the year, but it was in the 70s. And they were lobbing coins and bricks and stones at us throughout the whole game. And you just couldn't watch the game because you had one eye on the missiles that were coming in your direction and nothing was being done about it. I don't know where they got the stones from, whether they just were kicking up the concrete in the ground or where they brought them in with them. Coins, obviously, they had with them. And it was flying everywhere. And that was the scariest in the ground type moment I can think of. Fortunately, I think, there's been Cardiff games and things where there's been a lot of away fans. But I think when you've been to the ground so often, you know the way out, and you don't go looking for trouble, and you sort of head straight to the station or whatever, and you don't look for trouble, so to speak. But in the ground, that was the scariest moment. I think the other one, I think, where the ground used to be open, or sort of West Ham fans coming to the shelf when we was in there and things like that. And it's such a compact area, there's nothing you can do about it if it happened, and you just got to be lucky to be out of the way, or unfortunate if you're in the way.
Wow. Okay. What about a player that you used to love but you don't anymore?
I find it hard to boo players of Spurs. I don't think I ever boo Spurs players while they're playing for Spurs, even if they're added by your people. They drive you to frustration with performances that you think they're not necessarily putting into the game, but they probably are, but their mind's not on it. The Eriksen more recently, you think he's such a better player than people are saying he is, but he just didn't seem to have his heart in it. But I guess the obvious one, and I haven't used him so far, so I'll probably say Mr. Campbell. He was a very good midfielder and then an excellent defender, and I think if he'd have stayed at Spurs, could have become a legend that so many other players have been, because he was a brilliant player, and I would challenge anyone who said he wasn't. Whilst he was at Spurs, I thought he was a great player and a player we needed and benefited from having whilst he was there. But obviously, the way he left and who he went to and the circumstances behind it will never, ever heal in terms of Spurs. I think you've got to forgive and forget, and I hate the chant about him. I don't think I'd ever chant his name badly or otherwise. I think we should drop that and never chant his name in any way, shape or form on the ground. I hate that.
That chant is not only awful, but I remember watching, I think it was a friendly game about 5 years ago. It was on ITV4 or whatever. First game of the season against whoever it was, Real Betis or something. And within 30 seconds, the fans are chanting the Sol Campbell chant.
Crazy.
And I thought, my goodness, guys, what are you doing?
Yeah. Half of them probably weren't there when he played anyway, in fairness.
So please, let's not do that anymore.
No, never again would be too soon.
And the trouble is, the other thing is, I have to blimmin' chant his name because I'm a Southend United local.
Cool.
So he's down there. But I'll tell you a funny little story. I was a lot of the players obviously live round here, and I bumped into one of them. He's moved on now, so his name's Simon Cox, and he was in a bar, and I got chatting to him, and I said, "Oh, Sol Campbell's coming. I'll tell you now that I'm a Spurs fan, but is he any good?" And he just looked at me like, and he just went, "I'm not." And I was like, "No, you don't need to say anymore." So yeah. Quite a strange character.
Yeah, weird.
And
do you chant his name down at Roots Hall?
Well, I certainly don't.
Look, the fans do. Or not yet.
Well, I don't think they've won a game.
No.
So, they don't.
No.
Strange appointment. A club like Southend is not a prima donna like Sol Campbell. They need like a rough and tumble. Neil Warnock's probably a little bit out of their price range, but someone like that, someone to get down and start shouting and screaming.
Stevebridge is my local side, a bit equivalent of yours, and they appointed Teddy Sheringham for. I don't think he made a whole season out even, but again, it's a wrong appointment. Bit of PR and what have you, but you don't cut your teeth on a club like that. You need someone who's so they can roll their sleeves up and get the best out of an average bunch of players, really.
Yeah, I mean, again, like Teddy Sheringham was never known for his, his passion, if you like. Fantastically gifted footballer. Doesn't come across well on telly. And I love Teddy. Sorry.
Yes.
But he doesn't particularly show that passion.
No.
And he doesn't speak particularly well. You can imagine him in the dressing room. Robbie Keane definitely has got that charisma, if you like.
Yes.
For Stevenage, definitely similar to South.
Yes.
Those clubs, I think you need, you need to get someone, definitely someone from a top league.
Yes, a Pulis or even an Allardyce or something like that. That's,
yeah. Well,
you'd have on your side in a battle, but you wouldn't necessarily, want him at a top club.
Well, they got Kevin Bond, but the only reason they got Kevin Bond was because they offered it to Harry Redknapp, and Harry said, "Well, actually, I'd love to, but I'm down in Bournemouth and I'm all right, but Kev will do it.
Yeah,
my best mate will do it, and I'm on the end of the phone, sort of thing." And that didn't work. I mean, the best one was Phil Brown. He was terrific for Southend. I don't know if you follow Southend at all, but
some play at Stevenage last a couple of years ago in the cup or whatever it was. Yeah. But
a lot of the games were turgid and they were wins, but they were wins. And anyway, back to Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Two more questions to go. What player have you had to defend over the years? You've said he's all right. All your mates have gone, "Hey, he's rubbish." You're like, "Hey, he's all right, he is." Who comes to mind?
I think probably, recent player, I guess, I've had an argument with, I won't name them, but about Dembele, Moussa Dembele. I mean, I think he's been brilliant and was brilliant, and we missed him immensely when, all right, he was probably past his best. I don't think anyone can doubt that. But Moussa Dembele in midfield, when he just got the ball he couldn't get the ball off of him. He won the ball back and he passed it off to someone else who did their bit, hopefully. But so, not everyone was a Moussa Dembele fan, and I thought he was brilliant, and to this day, we've not replaced him. So I would say in current era is probably Dembele. Probably going back to guys I've already mentioned, probably John Pratt never got the recognition, and I think, whether it's his name or whatever, but he certainly didn't get the recognition from the fans, and you often had to defend him. And even before that, as I mentioned before, Phil Beale, I think he was, he was just brilliant in defence and an unsung hero. But I think modern era is probably Moussa Dembele. I've had disagreements with other fans.
I think you've mentioned three perfect examples there, but of course with Dembele, do you know, like when people say, "Oh, I've watched his YouTube clip reel, and he's a fantastic player," and you go, "Well,
a few others.
Yeah, he wasn't actually that good." I think Dembele's YouTube reel is probably the worst example, because he scored so few goals and created so few. But as I've always said, a match is 94 minutes long. For 4 minutes, you're watching goal chances. For the other 90, you're basically watching the play.
Yeah.
And you're watching Moussa Dembele, because the way he got the ball and passed the ball and glided past players and just was a joy to watch.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And when Wanyama was at his peak, and that was probably only one season, but him and Dembele in midfield, he just couldn't get past them, or you couldn't get the ball from them.
Fantastic, weren't they?
Absolutely. If only you could have that sort of, hard but, creative footballers at the same time at their peak, then that's brilliant.
Absolutely. Brilliant. I forgot, actually, that Wanyama played against Ajax in the first half.
Of course.
So and he's come out recently and said he was disappointed not to pick for the final. And again, he's another player where you go, was he completely gone? Because he came in and again he came into that side and you thought, hang on, we got Dyer. Do we really need another one?
But he
came in and he scored after a couple of games at Crystal Palace, and he was wonderful. What a wonderful season that was.
Yeah, it was.
Right, here's your final question then, Terry. So aliens come down. And they bump into you and they say, the great Spurs fan who has been to all these Spurs nights and your knowledge of Spurs is so wonderful. It's probably even better than Jason McGovern. He's pretty good, but yours is even better. Definitely better than Colin McKee. So we want to ask you, what is this football? What is it? And you say, aha, here is a DVD. Watch this. This is football. What DVD are you handing the alien?
I think it'd be easier to give them a Spurs game, and it'd be easier to give them a game where Spurs won. But if they haven't got the emotion that we have at Spurs, then it might not. And aliens probably don't have emotion, so that wouldn't necessarily look as good as we think it is, and it is to us. I'd stick to that game I mentioned before, which was the 70 World Cup, where the pure football between Brazil and Italy, and Brazil Jairzinho, Rivellino, Pelé, Carlos Alberto, those sort of names just rolled off the tongue even, 50 years later. I think if you ever get a chance to see clips of that game again and the goals particularly, you know, Italy were obviously a brilliant side to get to the World Cup final, but Brazil just showed everyone the passing game for almost that you see at the top level now with Barcelona in the past and Man City maybe and Liverpool certainly last season, where it was literally back to front football passing, no long punts, no nothing other than slick passing to the players' feet, movement off the ball, you know, the old push and run, I guess, if we're not around that time, but just pure football. And I think, you know, if they watch that game, I think they know everything about what football should be, even though in reality it's obviously nothing like that most of the games.
Yeah, brilliant. What a great answer. Terry, it's been a joy.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. I've loved every minute of it. And thank you once again for the invite and the opportunity.
No, fantastic, mate. Is there anything you want to say about the current situation with football, with Spurs?
Can't wait to get back, obviously. I think the big PR blunder with the furloughing was a huge mistake. I understand why companies generally have to do it. It sticks a little bit hard when you're talking about, you know, average workers with probably on poor pay getting furloughed and only getting 80% of a poor, not necessarily a good salary to start with. And I think Spurs just got that one wrong. Fortunately, reversed it, but it took them too long, and I think they made the wrong decision. I think what they're doing since with the NHS and setting up the North Mid Hospital in their ground, which again will be an issue if they start playing football there.
Yeah.
You're going to kick the NHS out of Spurs ground to go back to football. That'll be a bit of a PR blunder as well, in my opinion. So I don't know how they're going to do that one unless North Mid take it back in-house again. But they've done a lot of good stuff, and they do a load of great stuff for the community, and long may that last. They need to get it to that next level. We get there, and as we said before, they just don't get that next step, and that does need big money investments. And we have spent good money over the years and bought some very Joe average players, and spending a lot of money on players doesn't guarantee success. There's only a finite number of players around, and you can't guarantee you're going to get them. You've got to give Mourinho a chance, I think, and you've got to give them a budget to invest in the players that Poch didn't seem to get for whatever reasons. I'm always positive, always half full, and always looking forward to the next game and cheering them on to my dying breath.
Brilliant. All right, matey. That is fantastic. Now, listen, thanks for coming on.
No, thank you.
It's been a joy. As I say, this series of podcasts, I've gone through people who I think Spurs fans would be interested to listen to. So I asked people on other podcasts to come on. Most of them have. They've been absolutely fantastic. And with you, Terry, obviously you're not a podcaster, but you're just a super fan who the name came into my mind and I thought, yeah, we'll get him on as well because you're such a massive Spurs fan. So well done. Sure,
thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you again.
All right, mate. Cheers. Come on, you Spurs.
Cheers, mate. All the best. Come on, you Spurs. Yeah.